Hey, good morning, everybody. Glad to be here. My name is Greg Burt, Vice President of the California Family Council. As you can see, we have a great guest with us today, Joseph Combe. He is with the Family Policy Alliance. So appreciate you being with us.
Honored to be here, Greg. Thanks for the chance.
Yeah, so why don't you kind of introduce yourself a little bit about your role with the Family Policy Alliance.
Happy to do that. Thank you again for the chance to be here, Greg. Sure. Just for the last couple of days of good advocacy especially, God's been really good. My name is Joseph Combe. I'm the Director of Public Policy at Family Policy Alliance, which is a national nonprofit ministry focused on advancing family values through legislation across the country and in the federal government. So I'm an attorney in my role. I'm licensed in the state of New York and Washington, D.C., and I direct our policy efforts through policy analysis, recommendations, and then through actually consulting and advising a lot of our state groups like California Family Council. There's about 40 of them. We call them state family policy councils.
That's right.
They are the ones in the trenches in your state houses actually making a difference. So at FPA, I like to think of us as close air support to them who are the actual infantry. They're doing the hard work. It's just every now and then I get to come in and help with really important efforts on behalf of families and children. It's a privilege to get to do that. So I think we're going to talk a little bit about that today, right, Greg?
That's right. And so we're talking about a very important issue, age verification on pornographic websites. Now, you know, this has been a concern. If you're a parent and you have a child with a computer, a smartphone, I mean, you are concerned about what they could be exposed to online. And this is an issue that goes across party lines. Kids are being exposed to graphic, violent pornography at younger and younger ages because it's right in their handheld devices that they have with them all the time. And so parents have been struggling with getting different filters and, you know, trying to limit and prevent their kids from stumbling across pornography. But it's still happening anyway. And a lot of these pornography websites are trying to hook your kids, right, at younger and younger ages because they know if they get long-term customers, that makes them more money. Mm-hmm. And so there's a movement around the country to make sure pornography websites are not letting minors see their content. And so why don't you tell us something about how that's happening?
Absolutely. So I think most of our supporters, people with traditional sexual values, have believed for a long time that pornography is wrong for all ages, but especially for children.
Right.
Because parents have the right to direct the upbringing of their children. That's what we believe, and it's also, fortunately, the constitutional standard. And part of what that means is that parents get to be the primary guardians of their child's innocence, and especially their sexual innocence. And
right.
As the technology has grown in the past few decades, pornography, specifically online pornography, which is far and away the primary means anyone consumes pornography anymore, has really circumvented that right of parents. You know, with the rise of the smartphone, which all the research shows kids are more and more adept at than their parents usually, are able to get around almost any kind of blockage to that, like a filter. So filters have been proven to be widely ineffective. Most operating systems like Apple's iOS has a filtering device or filtering function that parents can use to filter out content for their kids in their phone, but it's very difficult to use. Most parents don't really understand it, so it's really ineffective. Well, recently, technology has developed so that when people go online to do things like, say, purchase alcohol or purchase smoking products, those sellers have to verify that their buyers are actually over the age of majority. And now we have technology to do that at the same time is 90% effective within a year of your age. And it protects your user privacy. So then logically, it means why don't we do that for pornography? If you were to go into a convenience store and purchase a Playboy, you'd have to flash your driver's license to show you were over 18 and do it. Can't we do that online? And the answer
exactly.
is with technology, yes. So this is a really great new tool for people like us who want to protect kids from pornography to do that. And last year we saw 7 states do that, starting with Louisiana, running all the way through a wide range of states, including my own home state of Virginia, which is what political analysts would call very purple. It had a Democrat
right.
Senate and a Republican House at that time. It doesn't right now after recent elections, but it did then. And one of these bills got through there, and Governor Glenn Youngkin signed it. So he had 7 states that signed this and passed these bills, and all it does is require that adult websites, like the largest pornographic sites in the world, simply have to verify the age of their users before their users can access their pornographic content. And this year, FPA recognized that trend last year. And so this year, we formed a coalition of our state family policy councils and like-minded legislators and national allies to try to get as many more states to pass those bills. And we've seen just dramatic progress in that. We're up to 8 states that have passed those bills through their legislatures this year, with another 12 or 13 that could still do it in 2024. So this is a real great trend to protect kids in a way that's actually effective.
That's right. And we tried to introduce a bill last year on this topic, but the author of the bill got a little skittish when Louisiana got sued over it. And so the bill was pulled back. But this year, we decided to try California to introduce it again. And so we really relied on Joseph and his team for language that had already been tested in the courts. And then there was a Fifth Circuit, the law in Texas mm-hmm. was challenged, and then it was appealed to the Fifth Circuit Court, federal court, and they won. Yes. They defended the law that it did not violate free speech, because the state has a obligation or
compelling state interest.
That's it. That's the legal language. Compelling state interest to protect minors from harmful content. Mm-hmm. Now, this has been acknowledged for years and decades, because you know when they had pornography behind the 7-Eleven counter, they used to cover it up. But what was that for? That was all about protecting minors from seeing pornographic content. So why can't you do that on big porn websites? I mean. So we introduced it here in California, knowing that California is, I don't know, they're probably producing more pornography here than anywhere else, and we got 40 million people, and if it happened in California, we knew it was a big lift to try and introduce this in California. And, you know, everybody, California's got a reputation for being crazy and, you know, being loose in its moral values and, like, would it ever get passed in California? So, but we were going to try anyway.
Yeah.
And
that's what we did yesterday.
What we did yesterday. Our first hearing, and just to let the cat out of the bag, we'll talk about it, but it got a unanimous yes vote. There were 11 members on this particular committee. It was the Assembly Privacy and Consumer Protection Committee, and we got 10 yes votes, and the remaining legislator just abstained. And so... Oh, it's only the first committee, but it just shows you that California is not lost, and that there's light here. And the members, a lot of the members on this committee, well, they were mostly Democrats. There were 3 Republicans, and the rest were Democrats. But they were mothers, and they were talking about how they struggle to protect their kids from what they see online. So they're concerned about this as well, and so. So this is great. This is a bipartisan effort to get pornography out of the hands of kids. So
yeah, it's really dramatic, Craig, for just this movement to protect kids. It's hard to overstate how significant this progress is in California for a number of different reasons. And I want to start by just saying I think most people who went into these bills or tried to pass them and have passed them knew that there was always going to be litigation over them, but they haven't let that stop them for a number of different reasons. Not just that the technology has improved so that age verification providers can protect your identity while you do it, but also because over the last few decades, research has constantly continued to show that pornography is actually deeply damaging to individuals who watch it. It drives your perception of the opposite sex. It drives your perception of the act of intercourse itself. And it damages your brain. It has about the same effect on your brain as a hard drug. And we saw the court, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is where the Texas piece of legislation was heard and appealed to, actually cited that research as proof that the state does have, the legal term is a compelling state interest in protecting children, especially from exposure to this harmful material and material that would be obscene for adults, but is especially obscene for them. So what that means is now we're here in California, right? In modern day America, the two parties are so far apart. Even the most moderate, lightweight political observer sees how divided America is. And it can be really frustrating for them, because you hear about a lot of different pieces of legislation that bring up issues that really should be bipartisan, that haven't historically been partisan dividing issues. But because all the incentive structures currently prevent the two sides from working together for fear of being seen as a traitor to your party, a lot of these issues that should be bipartisan just aren't. And I think that's what's most encouraging about this progress in California, Greg, is that here in California, what would be considered the deepest of blue states, it's either California or my own home state of New York, is as Democrat and as blue as it gets. So not something you would think is open to social conservatism. But even here, we were on this committee hearing yesterday, and several moms on the committee, like you said, confessed that this is a worthwhile cause. This is something they care about. And this is what should encourage people, is that here you have an issue that in a right world, of course, should be bipartisan. Protecting kids from pornography, making sure parents are involved in how and when their innocence is revealed in the context of sexual intercourse.
Right.
And so that has overcome all the incentive structures against bipartisan collaboration, so that now you have committees that are just overrun or completely run by Democrats willing to pass a bill like this. They've acknowledged publicly in this hearing that the state does have a compelling state interest in this, and they're willing to work across the aisle with the author, with other members on the committee, and throughout the legislature to find language that actually works and that everybody's happy with. That should really encourage people in that there are still really important issues that overcome all the anti-bipartisan forces in America and bring people together to do something good, even in a place like California. It's really magnanimous and incredible progress for this movement to protect children.
Hey, I know. I was excited that we were broaching this topic at the Capitol, because a lot of times... Attempts to talk about minors and pornography, those conversations have been avoided, especially when they come up in the context of school curriculum or books that are found in libraries. So far, all of our attempts to point out that pornography is now infiltrating our schools has been met with accusations of book banning, right? Mm-hmm. But I think, so this is really the first time we have both sides admitting that, you know, there is content out there that we don't want our kids to see, and it is harmful. And it was interesting to see the chair of the committee bring up an article that was in the New York Times just the week before, talking about this new trend among college students. I guess a survey they had done where women were admitting they were being choked If they were having sex with, you know, someone. And this choking idea was coming from... Where did that idea come into the sexual relationship? And they were getting... The men were getting it from pornography.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's evidence of how pornography is shaping people's, and especially young people's, views of what sexual intercourse should be. So I think a lot of the research that the committee heard during the committee yesterday was clearly very shocking. In fact, I cited some research yesterday during the committee hearing. I cited some research during the committee hearing yesterday that I think was really powerful to them, and even our opposition gave us some research that ended up being helpful, and I'll get to that in a second. But this research is worth our audience hearing, so I'm gonna convey some of that to them as well. I cited research showing that over 88% of pornographic videos depict sexual violence. And of those same videos, 48% of them also contain some kind of verbal abuse. And then studies further showed that 53% of male adolescents and 39% of females actually believe the lie that pornography is an accurate representation of sexual intercourse. So what that means is that these children are learning about sex from a perspective that portrays sex as physical abuse, rather than receiving age-appropriate sexual education from ideally a parent or guardian, but even just some kind of perspective that shows sex what it is, which is not violent. It's not supposed to be violent or abusive, but kids think that's what sex is. And I showed the final piece of statistics that really, I think, impacted the committee was that more than half of the young people that accessed this material online accessed it unintentionally. And it's part of why filters are ineffective. So one way they can accidentally come across it is through an app like Snapchat. Well, filters don't apply to apps, Greg. And in Snapchat, you can be just a couple of taps away from Pornhub, the world's largest pornography supplier online, and your filters are completely ineffective, and you only got there through something innocent like Snapchat. So kids are stumbling upon this really graphic and dehumanizing material accidentally. And something like age verification, which requires parental involvement if someone underage wants to watch pornography, could have prevented that. I think that was really powerful, the committee. And then I just finished by with the statistic that the average age of first exposure to pornography right now is between 7 and 13 years old. I think any parent of any political or moral persuasion would be horrified if their 8 or 9-year-old stumbled across hardcore, violent, abusive pornography without them knowing or even being involved. And then our opposition handed us a big piece of help when they said that 25% of all internet sources or all internet searches are for pornography. Several members of the committee expressed how shocked they were at that statistic alone.
Right.
So this is clearly a problem. It hurts kids, and something like age verification could have prevented it and ensured parental involvement, because we, places like California Family Council and Family Policy Alliance, believe sexuality is a gift from God.
Right.
It's a beautiful thing to be enjoyed under certain circumstances, to bind married couples together and to give birth to new life. It's not supposed to be abusive, and yet that's the primary view through which children are learning about and imbibing sex and what they think it's supposed to be. And that's how you get articles like that from the New York Times, where kids are being, or women are being, actively choked during sex and reporting significant injuries, even, I think, traumatic brain injury even,
right,
because of it. I mean, it's just shocking. And this is all the results of unregulated access to porn for children.
Yeah, one of the witnesses we had, actually, we flew in from Kansas City. She was a nurse, and she gave testimony that, you know, she has been investigating or just treating kids who've been sexually abused. And what she has noticed in the trend is the perpetrators are getting younger and younger. Actually, boys between the age, I think she said 11 and 15 were some of the highest percentage of those kids were the actual perpetrators. And these kids are learning sexual violence and abusive sexual behavior from the pornography they're watching. And then they're abusing little kids. Could be siblings, it could be cousins, could be other kids they know. They, you know, little kids, when they see something, they get curious, they want to act it out. They don't have the maturity to have self-control to know when something is good or what something is bad. And so this is now affecting, you know, kids at younger and younger ages.
Well, yeah, one of the things that she talked about so well was that when she's seeing all these cases of abuse between young people, the only, usually when you have a case like that, there are several risk factors involved in the suspect's past. So maybe they were abused themselves, maybe they had been through some kind of trauma in the past, you know, it could be a number of things. And in most of these cases she's seeing, though, the only risk factor involved was heavy porn consumption. There was no abuse, they had a good family, they weren't substance abuse addicts, whatever. The only risk factor was the porn consumption. So what else are we to assume except that? And now she spoke from personal experience, but all the research supports that too. And it's sad, Greg, really, because, you know, anyone who has kids wants their kids to grow up and have healthy relationships and be safe during their intimacy.
And
this unregulated access to porn for kids, and which results in no parental involvement, this is the fruit that bears.
Right. Now, I'm sure some of you out there asking, I get it, porn is bad for kids. I mean, you're not going to have a whole lot of disagreement among our audience on that.
Or anyone, as we saw yesterday, fortunately.
Yeah, so that's great. So, but a lot of the questions yesterday from committee members, well, how in the world does this thing work?
Yeah.
Right?
We should talk about data privacy for sure.
Right, because obviously our First Amendment does protect some type of porn use. Mm-hmm. And so even if we wanted to, we cannot ban pornography in the United States because people have the right to freedom of speech. Maybe you can explain that a little bit.
Absolutely.
Because there are some limits to what type of pornography is legal and not legal, mm-hmm. right? And then maybe let's talk about why has the technology changed? Because previously, and maybe you can tell us about this, you know, this has been tried before to require websites to, you know, not let minors on them. And previously, those cases have lost because, from my understanding, the courts have said to put these requirements that, you know, that the pornography websites have to protect an age. Age for age verification is just too cumbersome for the adults, right? But technology has now changed, so that's no longer the case. So
yeah, that's very good, Craig. So every good law student will know very early on in their legal education that unfortunately pornography is indeed protected speech. Obviously, non-consensual pornography is illegal, but all the research shows it's impossible to tell which porn is consensual and which is not, which is a whole other problem. But the point is, until we know better, pornography is protected speech, which means adults have unlimited have an unlimited right to access and view it as much as they want. So every time that governments, including the federal government, have tried to put some kind of regulation on pornography that prevents kids from seeing it, courts have overturned it, because when the last piece of significant federal legislation that tried this and actually got enacted was in the 90s, and the court overruled it because it was very cumbersome. The technology, as you can imagine, late 90s, early 2000s is not where it is today. Plus, even as late recently as then, we didn't have all the research on the harms of pornography that Greg and I just talked through. So now courts have these several new factors. You have the growth of technology, you have all the research that shows how harmful it is. And that was all reflected so well in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals' recent decision written by Justice Smith. And what they ruled was that age verification through online for pornographic websites was not a substantial burden on the free speech rights of adults because the technology is so good. So to talk about the technology to illustrate why that's the case, we had an expert on the technology here for the hearing yesterday, which he was brilliant, so I'm not going to be as good as him, but I do get the general idea enough to convey the point here, which is that age verification technology is incredibly effective online, and it's incredibly safe. It's effective in that there are multiple ways it can verify your age. For adults, you can just flash your identification card on the screen, and usually the age verification provider, which is a third-party site, it's not actually Pornhub or Xvideos, they would be required to send you to a third party that verifies your age through a scan that happens on your device, meaning no data is transmitted through the internet. It happens locally on your device. As soon as it verifies your age in a second or two, it immediately deletes that data and then gives you access to the site. It can do that through, like I said, scanning your ID, but there are other ways to do it, whether it's through a bank account or debit card, or it can even scan your face, which is called facial age estimation. That's very different from what we would call facial recognition, which I think we all might have concerns about depending on how a government uses it. That is not what this is, because the scan of your face is not tied to individually who you are. All it does is tell, are you 18 or not? And it's incredibly accurate at doing this. And then, like I said, any data they use locally on your device to estimate and confirm your age is instantly deleted. There are several reasons for this. There's incentives behind it. So these third parties that do the age verification, their reputation is their business. So if they have a reputation of retaining people users' data against their will, they're going to go out of business because some other competitor will come up who says, I will protect your privacy and not retain your information, and they'll get the different contracts. Right. So there's that incentive structure, which is financial, which I think we can all appreciate. Right. Then under these bills, there's a legal liability incentive. So under bills like AB 3080, it applies liability to two distinct actors. The first one is the actual pornographic website. Under the bill, they have to verify the user's age before allowing them to view the content. If they do not, they're liable under the bill. The other piece of liability is the actual age verifier. So when the pornographic website sends the user to the third party to verify their age, that third party is liable if they retain any of the data used to verify the user's age. So say you want to view a pornographic website and you flash your driver's license for the third party to verify your age. If they retain a copy of your license, under this law, they would be liable for that because they've breached your privacy under the law. So they have a legal liability incentive not to retain your data. Those are two heavy pieces of incentives to protect user privacy. And the Fifth Circuit Court took all of that into account, the fact that this is so easy, it happens in a few seconds. It's the, as we said yesterday in the hearing, it's the online equivalent of if you go to a liquor store, flash your ID. Yes, I'm over 21. Now I can buy the alcohol.
Right.
This is the online equivalent of that. And in some cases, it takes even less than that because the clerk's going to scrutinize your license. You know, at TSA, they're going to scan it, and it takes a couple minutes. On the internet, it happens in a few seconds. And the court ruled that that is not a substantial burden because adults can easily get past it and watch as much pornography as they want. Right. And if it's a child who's under 18, they're going to be blocked. And they have to go to their parents if they want to see it. And that necessitates parental involvement. So the court ruled that all of that, against the very compelling state interest that Texas and these other states have had in protecting kids from pornography, was not a substantial burden on adults' right to access this First Amendment protected content. So that was a long explanation, but that's because this is a very complex bill. You had experts on various things yesterday that all come together in this bill. You have one of our friends who was the expert on the technology. You have the nurse who's the expert on how this stuff works out in tragic ways. And then I got to serve as our legal expert. So you have all these things coming together in one bill. But I think we showed yesterday, Greg, that when we present these different sides of the bill, well, these different aspects of it in a winsome but intelligent and clear way,
right?
Anyone from any political or moral persuasion can understand it and feels the need to buy into it. It was so encouraging yesterday.
Yeah, so now we're all excited that it made through this one committee, but if you follow legislation, it's a long, laborious process.
Yeah,
right?
So, we got a few more steps
so
after this
one. There is another hearing next week in the Assembly Judiciary Committee, and then it would go to the Assembly floor, and there's 80 members who you got to get the majority of them to vote yes, and then you're a little less than halfway done. Then you got to go to the Senate, and it's probably going to get stuck. Not stuck. It's going to get assigned to two other committees, and we'll have to do this all over again. And then it goes to the Senate floor, and then it gets through those 40 members, and then it's up to the governor whether he signs it or not. So that's the process that any bill has to go through to get approved. Mm-hmm. But you know, we've started the process. I mean, and one of the really interesting things about this bill is I did not hear anybody talking about this topic in California at the legislature before we introduced it. So in many times, it takes a while before legislators get introduced to an idea, they get comfortable before they're willing to, okay, we'll vote on this. And so we really are starting a whole brand new conversation. So the fact that we got through the first committee with nobody voting no, I'm a little giddy, but you know, that's a huge deal on a topic most of them hadn't really considered before, and so it's a good start. And so listen, we have already made so much more progress than I originally thought we would, that anything that happens now, I'm still going to be happy. Yeah. But we're not giving up. Now we have to go and convince the legislators on the Judiciary Committee to get excited about this bill. But we got our hands full for the next, 4 months. And so we're going to be busy. And, you know, because of your support of our organization here enables us to do this. So thank you so much for those of you who are supporting us. We obviously could not do this without you. And so God bless you.
Yeah, and I'll just encourage everybody. The one thing all those votes on the committee agreed on yesterday was the policy objective, which is protecting kids from pornography. I think that goes beyond politics, folks. It goes into the moral sphere, which is very easy to think that is lost in American culture, particularly in California. But yesterday proved us that it's not.
That's right.
And people can be convinced to do the right thing. And we did that yesterday. Even some of the committee members who expressed maybe some hesitation with the specific language of the bill said, I do agree that this is a worthy objective. We all should want to do this. So let's work together and get to a place where we're all comfortable with the language. We all feel good about the future litigation that's going to occur over this bill. That should encourage people. So like Greg said, all your support makes this possible. So continue to support our efforts in this. Family Policy Alliance is so privileged to get to work with California Family Council and so many other state groups on this. So it's a really encouraging, Greg. Lots of good things ahead.
And it's another great thing just to be part of an organization that has other organizations we can turn to for help. I mean, obviously, I could have tried to do this all by myself.
Yeah.
It would have been very hard. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you guys were able to come in, help us with the experts, help us with language.
I should say.
And then I was just the guy on the ground to help you find an author and be the person on the ground knowing how the whole system works. Mm-hmm. We worked as a team, and so excited that you guys are there for groups like ours, and hopefully, you know, going forward, we can use this as a model to do greater and better things.
No, I think we will. I mean, this was a coalition effort. I mean, Family Policy Alliance organized the coalition, and you took the lead on this on the ground, Greg, and have done just a superb job. We know you'll continue to do that. And we worked with several other national organizations. I got to give credit to the Institute for Family Studies and Ethics and Public Policy Center, who are our lead national advocates or lead national allies on this issue. We actually, it's one of their model bills that AB 3080 is originally based on and that we've helped get passed in other states. And then our 40-plus state family policy councils, of which California Family Council is one. And yesterday we had a group local to California but does worldwide work called Exodus Cry, which is an anti-trafficking organization. They got multiple survivors of sex trafficking in pornography to show up yesterday to show their support. So this is a team effort of great people and great groups. And FPA is just glad to have played a part in it. But California Family Council are the bus drivers of it here in California. So we're thankful. We're all thankful for the support of everyone listening.
All right. Well, thanks, folks, for listening. And we'll keep you updated on other legislation as the year goes on. So God bless you and have a great day.